All right, so for our mission today, we're doing a really tight focus on one of the most dynamic areas of modern life, technology's role in education.
Right.
We're drawing from a fascinating stack of sources here. It's essentially a deep dive into an updated framework, something based on a 2015 chapter, but now, seen through the lens of late 2024, maybe even 2025 advances.
And that new lens is critical.
It is. And just to be clear, this isn't a conversation about, whether schools should buy more tablets. It's about understanding how technology has fundamentally changed the cognitive pathways of learning.
The how.
Exactly. We need to pull out the foundational concepts. What is knowledge building? How critical is metacognition? And I think most importantly, where does that uniquely human element fit in when machines are doing so much?
Well, what's fascinating here is just the sheer velocity of the shift. I mean, for decades, EdTech was mostly a substitute.
A digital worksheet for a paper one.
Exactly. Or a video lecture instead of being there in person. But if you look at the data now, technology has become this powerful lever for cognitive tasks. It makes new ways of learning possible that weren't just difficult before, they were physically and logistically impossible.
Okay, so that's the transformation we need to understand.
That's a
Let's unpack that. The sources really hammer this point that tech has moved beyond just, making information delivery efficient. It's now doing complex jobs that took huge amounts of human labor just a few years ago.
That's the absolute key. Just consider the scale for a second. What can a networked classroom do now? Think about the barriers that have just been erased.
You mean geographical barriers?
Geographical, logistical, all of it.
Yeah.
We can have a design team in Texas working in real-time, sustained collaboration with a peer review group in Tokyo. I mean, that's global connectivity enabling authentic social learning.
And beyond that.
Well, the storage and retrieval capacity
Sure.
is. It's basically limitless now. You're not just looking at a few library books. You have instant access to specialized databases, to primary source material, instantly.
Right. And the calculation and simulation power, that's something I think gets overlooked, but it fundamentally changes how we teach science and engineering.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Running sophisticated, multivariable simulations, modeling complex climate systems, or processing massive data sets in biology. This stuff used to be for professional research labs only.
And now students can do it.
Now students can engage in this level of high-fidelity inquiry on their own devices. The practical outcome is profound. Educators are freed up to design richer experiences, less constrained by the physical limits of time or resources.
That makes perfect sense. So tech is handling the heavy lifting, the data crunching,
Mm.
but that immediately brings up the crucial question, right? If tech takes over the algorithmic work, what's left? What's the inherent limitation? What is that uniquely human gap we have to focus on in education?
And if we only focus on automation and efficiency, we miss the human contribution entirely. The sources, they highlight two major areas where AI and computers really struggle to catch up. And these have to become the pillars of human education now.
Okay.
The first is something called tacit knowledge. So explicit knowledge is what you can write in a manual or code into an algorithm, right? The steps to solve a quadratic equation.
Got it.
Tacit knowledge is implicit. It's learned through experience, intuition, context. It's the ability to know how to approach a problem you've never seen before, or the subtle judgment you need when the data is incomplete or conflicting.
Okay, can you give us a really concrete example, something that shows that
Sure,
contrast?
absolutely. Think about a complex medical diagnosis. An AI can read a billion medical records and flag the 10 most statistically probable diseases based on the data.
Right, that's the explicit algorithmic part.
Pure efficiency. But the experienced ER doctor uses tacit knowledge. They notice the subtle shift in the patient's breathing, the way they hold their arm, or an inflection in the family's voice that signals something critical that wasn't even in the data set.
So it's pattern recognition beyond the data points.
It's framing the problem correctly, strategizing solutions, and predicting outcomes in a really ambiguous high-stakes situation.
That's a powerful distinction. The machine knows the rules, but the human knows the context.
Exactly. And the second limitation is wisdom. Computers, they just lack the capacity for wisdom. The sources define it not just as making smart decisions, but as the ability to evaluate information ethically. Aesthetically, it involves making these complex, holistic judgments that go way beyond logic and data.
So if tech gets better and better at the complex calculations, the educational mission has to pivot. It has to be about cultivating that tacit, implicit knowledge and, critically, the human judgment to navigate it all.
Precisely. We have to teach the student how to be the expert who knows which calculation to run, and more importantly, why it matters.
When the data gives you three valid options.
But only one is culturally or ethically the right one for the situation.
Mm-hmm.
That's wisdom.
Okay, so now that we've defined that indispensable human element, let's pivot. What does high-quality, tech-supported learning actually look like? The sources keep coming back to John Dewey's idea of educative experiences. Why is a 100-year-old framework still so dominant?
Because Dewey was just fundamentally right about engagement and utility. He laid out these four characteristics that separate doing an activity from having a truly educative experience.
Okay.
First, it has to build on what the learner already knows. Second, it has to serve as a solid foundation for future learning. Third, it needs to have genuine social or cultural value.
And that fourth one, that's the one that really seems to click with modern motivation theory, right?
Absolutely. It must be immediately relevant to the learner. If the student can't see the point, if they don't see the context, the learning is temporary. They might pass the test, but it won't be retained or applied. It doesn't stick. Dewey's framework forces us to move past just passive reception and toward purposeful engagement.
Which brings us to this core tension in education that the sources talk about.
Mm-hmm.
How is this kind of deeper learning different from what most of us probably experience, that sort of traditional passive instruction?
Yeah, the contrast is between what they call instructionism and knowledge building. Instructionism is the old model. The teacher is the authority, knowledge is fixed, and the goal is memorization to match that authority. It's a consumption model.
Right.
Knowledge building is fundamentally different. It's a creation model. It's about developing deep understanding by encouraging learners to apply their emerging wisdom, their judgment, to articulate generalizations, and crucially, to create new understanding with others.
So knowledge is seen as a work in progress.
Always a work in progress. Constantly subject to improvement and, importantly, verified by evidence.
So, okay, let's make that concrete.
Yeah.
In an instructionist classroom studying a local park, they memorize dates, names of founders, that kind of thing.
Yep.
What happens in a knowledge-building environment with the same park?
Well, they wouldn't just learn the history. They'd immediately treat that history as an incomplete document. They might research the original land use, interview longtime residents, propose an addition to the park based on current community needs, and then justify that proposal with evidence.
So the knowledge they create is their own.
It's theirs. And it's constantly being revised by peer feedback and new data. And technology is essential there. It allows for easy collaboration, rapid revision, and access to all the diverse sources they need for verification.
And that immediately addresses that relevance issue we just talked about. This is where naturalistic learning comes in, getting us away from those sterile, abstract classroom exercises.
Exactly. Naturalistic learning just insists that academic skills have to be applied to complex, real-world problems. We move beyond the word problem about two trains leaving a station.
Right.
And we engage students in problems that mirror professional life, which are always messy, incomplete, and multifaceted.
And the importance here isn't just that it's more interesting, it's that it's better preparation. When you tackle a real-world problem, you can't just use math or just use history. You have to synthesize everything.
Precisely. Which requires that tacit knowledge we discussed. If students are asked to redesign a piece of local infrastructure, they're using geometry, government codes, material science, community polling. It provides context, relevance, and huge motivation.
It sounds a lot more engaging.
It is. And the degree of naturalism can vary, of course, but the core idea is preparing students for the messy challenges they're actually going to face.
Okay, so we've talked about the right kind of learning experiences, the goal of knowledge creation, but all of this depends on the student's internal drive. What's the mechanism that makes a student better at being a student? The engine of self-improvement.
That engine is metacognition. It's usually defined as thinking about thinking. And it's not a soft skill. It is a structural requirement for learning, especially in a world where information changes so fast.
Well, what does that look like in practice?
Metacognition means the learner has to become deeply aware of their own process. They have to ask themselves, do I know enough to solve this? What's the best strategy for me to study this topic? Why did I fail that assessment? And what specific part of my process needs to change?
It's that constant self-assessment and strategic adaptation.
That's what drives continuous growth.
And technology, which can sometimes be a distraction, can actually supercharge this self-awareness.
It absolutely should. I mean, if a student is just learning passively, they have no data on their process. But if they're working in a collaborative online environment or a digital portfolio, they can see data on time spent, on successful pathways peers have chosen, on their own knowledge gaps.
So the tech gives them a dashboard for their own learning.
Exactly. It provides the tools for immediate reflection, self-assessment, and personalized pathways. The student moves from being a passive recipient to an active monitor of their own strategy.
Okay, so let's zoom out a bit and try to synthesize these concepts. We've got Dewey's framework, knowledge building, naturalism, metacognition. If a learning environment is really succeeding at this deeper, active, authentic model, what are the common traits we should be able to see?
Well, there's a remarkably consistent convergence across all the successful models. They all share several non-negotiable characteristics.
Like what?
First, they're always based on real-world problems, or at least realistic scenarios. That eliminates the abstract exercises. Mm. Second, they focus heavily on skill development and competency. Can the student actually do something over just rote content coverage?
And the frameworks ensure the challenge is right for deep thought.
Yes. They provide multiple entry points to higher levels of cognitive engagement, you know, what we often call Bloom's taxonomy. So the activities consistently push students beyond simple recall and toward analysis, synthesis, creation.
And collaboration has to be front and center.
Absolutely. They have to leverage expertise from various sources, peers, mentors, online experts, the community, and actively encourage sustained social interaction and debate. And finally, and this is maybe the most important, they prioritize reflection and focus on creating products that matter.
Meaning the output has value beyond a grade.
Exactly. It holds value outside the classroom. Maybe it solves a local issue or it's research presented to a public audience. These elements make the learning memorable and fully transferable.
That's a great theoretical blueprint. But to make this really tangible for everyone listening, we need some concrete examples. Where are these ideas actually being implemented successfully?
Right, moving past simple substitution to genuine transformation.
Yes.
We can point to several established models where tech is truly transformational. Let's maybe focus on two of the most effective.
Perfect.
First, project-based learning, or PBL. This model is just ideal for fostering that tacit knowledge and naturalistic learning. These are extended, in-depth projects with a lot of student choice, originality, and often a public component.
In tech's role, there is.
Tech isn't just for research. It's the tool for complex data analysis, for collaboration, for the sophisticated presentation of the findings. A student might use mobile sensors and public data APIs to track water quality in a local stream, then use simulation software to model different remediation strategies.
That really does take the student from being a learner to being a genuine investigator.
It does. And the second major model is the upside-down classroom, or flipped learning. This one's so powerful because it addresses the scarcity of the teacher's time. Students engage with the foundational content lecture videos, simulations, readings at home.
Reversing the traditional model where just delivering information took up all the valuable face-to-face time.
Precisely. The classroom time is then freed up for what really matters.
Mm-hmm.
Interactive activities, complex problem solving, deep discussion, the areas where metacognition and knowledge building thrive. The teacher is transformed from a lecturer into a facilitator, a content expert guiding those crucial, real-time, wisdom-based discussions.
So technology enables the content delivery outside class, so the transformation can happen inside the class.
That's it. The teacher can finally dedicate their attention to analyzing student understanding, not just repeating facts.
That distinction freeing up human time for human judgment,
right.
That really feels like the core message of this deep dive. Tech and education isn't about doing old things faster anymore.
Not at all.
It's about doing new things by building systems that support deep understanding, relevance, and that essential skill of strategic self-awareness, metacognition. It supports the algorithm so the human can focus on the ambiguity.
And that leads us right back to the most critical takeaway for the sources.
Mm-hmm.
We now have these incredibly powerful tools, AI, big data, simulations for algorithmic tasks and storing information. And yet, the core human capabilities remain irreplaceable.
Mm.
Tacit knowledge for framing the problem and wisdom for ethical evaluation.
Mm.
And this raises a really important question for you, for everyone listening, and for educators everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Given the efficiency of our new technological partners, how deliberately and explicitly must we design education to teach the wisdom and human judgment that technology simply cannot provide?
Because if we don't
prioritize teaching students how to make ethical and relevant choices, we risk training a highly efficient generation that lacks the necessary judgment to steer its own capabilities. That's the challenge ahead.
A truly profound framework for thinking about the future. Thank you for diving deep with us today. We'll catch you next time.